It is Wednesday, October 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders dominate the first Democratic presidential debate. We speak with a correspondent in Kabul, Afghanistan, about the people who've been displaced by the recent fighting in Kunduz.
Well, a lot of them said they ran because there was fighting from all sides. One man said he has never been this scared in his life.
And we hear the latest about singer Demi Lovato. It's all ahead. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders dominated the Democratic Party's first presidential debate of the 2016 campaign, largely preserving their status as the party's frontrunners, according to some analysts. Clinton and Sanders, who were joined by three lesser-known candidates, former Virginia Senator Jim Webb, former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, and former Rhode Island Senator and Governor Lincoln Chafee, during the two-hour debate at a Las Vegas casino Tuesday. And they clashed over issues including gun control, economic policy, and the role of the U.S. military overseas. International Edition's Susan Yaki joins us to talk about the debate.
The five Democratic candidates running for the White House in the United States have held their first debate. And our reporter Bill Gallo has been following it and joins us now. Welcome, Bill.
Thanks for having me.
What do you find at the highs of the debate?
Well, it seems that Hillary Clinton was actually able to do quite well in this debate, according to many analysts. She was able to go on the offensive against Bernie Sanders, and that's what a lot of people had looked for, whether these two would go after each other. Bernie Sanders has tried to outflank her to the left on many positions, but he was able to highlight a few areas in which he seemed to be vulnerable, specifically on gun control and also on economic policies. And it seems that she may have actually landed a few blows. And also the reaction seems to be that she was just overall pretty calm and communicated very well, behaved like a front runner, and it was actually quite a good performance for her.
So she was a winner last night?
It seems that she was a winner.
Okay. What were the low points?
Well, like I said, the low point may have been Bernie Sanders on gun control. It seems to be an issue that he was quite vulnerable on, especially in the last few weeks. There's been some recent shootings, and his comments on gun control haven't exactly been in tune with what a lot of his liberal base may actually feel on this issue of gun control. Hillary Clinton criticized him for voting during his time in Congress against a law which would have required more background checks for potential gun owners. And he tried to hit back against that, but it was clearly a low point for him.
Well, you've been listening to analysts on this who've been following the debate. Overall, what is their sense about it?
Well, it's that Clinton did quite well. Bernie Sanders also did quite well, and that this remains a two-person race.
Okay, well, thank you very much for visiting with us.
Thanks so much.
That's International Edition's Susan Yaki. Well, as the Democrats who are seeking the presidency take the stage in Las Vegas, supporters offstage in the spin room and outside on the Las Vegas Strip are not shy about why their candidate is the best for the party. Elizabeth Lee reports from the Wynn Hotel in Las Vegas.
He's the working people's voice. Bernie, Bernie.
HRC 2016.
Even before the debate started, there was action outside the debate hall on the Vegas Strip. The supporters for Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders rallied for their candidate. Clinton booster Richard Monk says her background in foreign policy attracts him.
She's got a tremendous amount of experience with dealing with the world affairs, not just affairs in the U.S., but world affairs.
We need Bernie's voice.
Deborah Thompson supports Sanders.
I'm a nurse. I've been a nurse for 30 years. I've worked in four different countries. I've never seen such poor treatment of patients in the U.S.
So who won the debate from the perspective in the spin room? Here's the answer of Clinton supporter House Representative Judy Chu of California.
Oh, I clearly think she won this debate. I think that she came across very strongly on the issues of gun violence, on immigration, on paid family leave. And of course, most importantly, she would be a woman president.
But not everyone agrees. Liberal political commentator Ed Schultz is with the Bernie Sanders campaign.
I think Bernie won the debate because of the issues that are being discussed. I think that Bernie Sanders has set the agenda for this entire campaign. He is the one who's talked about the middle class.
Yvette Lewis supports former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley.
And when Governor O'Malley held his own on that stage and rose on that stage, I think he was the clear winner tonight.
We have done not a good job on that.
Former Virginia Senator Jim Webb and former Rhode Island Senator Lincoln Chafee also took the stage, but Chafee complained some of the candidates did not get equal time.
Trying to just get the time to answer the question. There were so many questions that a couple of us didn't get the chance to even answer.
One person who was noticeably absent was Vice President Joe Biden, who is still deciding whether he will run for the presidency. That has not stopped the super PAC draft Biden from releasing this ad on the day of the debate, urging him to run.
You never quit on America, and you deserve a president.
Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz with the Democratic National Committee says another candidate will only generate more enthusiasm.
There's no way for it to be anything other than a positive.
But John Spicer with the Republican National Committee thinks differently.
Hillary Clinton had a chance tonight to really outshine the four other folks that were on stage, and she didn't do it. I think if you're Joe Biden, you look at tonight's performance, and that's just one more reason you jump in the race.
Many of these Clinton and Sanders supporters say they will not consider Biden. They are behind their candidate all the way to the end. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Las Vegas.
Well, now for reaction on social media, I'm joined by International Edition's Olin Akisholu. Olin, what has been the reaction to this debate?
Hi, Sarah. Well, social media really lit up last night during the debate. An interesting trend I found is that certain hashtags started floating around in response to specific moments during the night. One hashtag that people started using was hashtag damn emails. And that started after Bernie Sanders came to Clinton's defense over criticism of her private email server, saying, "The American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails." Hashtag I'm with her started trending with a tweet from Bill Clinton showing a picture of himself watching the debate. Another moment lots of people posted about was Clinton's refusal to engage Lincoln Chafee over criticism of her private email server.
Well, how much were people talking about each candidate on social media?
Well, I looked up the number of tweets in the past day that included each candidate's full name or their name as a hashtag. Bernie Sanders had around 220,000 name mentions in tweets, according to the Twitter analytics site Topsy. Hillary Clinton had around 160,000 name mentions. Jim Webb had under 125,000. Lincoln Chafee had under 75,000. And Martin O'Malley had under 30,000 name mentions. This doesn't include tweets that only mention part of a candidate's full name.
How did the response differ between the first Democratic debate and the last Republican debate?
Hashtag GOP debate was used a little under 1 million times on the day of CNN's last debate on September 16th. The hashtag for last night's debate, hashtag Dem debate, was used nearly 1.7 million times yesterday.
Thanks very much, Olin. That is International Edition's Olin Akisholu. In other news, the United States has condemned the killing of Israeli civilians in Jerusalem and expressed concern about escalating tensions between Palestinians and Israelis. Seven Israelis and 29 Palestinians, eight of them children, have been killed in various locations this month. Palestinians are carrying out almost daily attacks on Israelis as the frustration grows about their situation in the West Bank and the coastal Gaza Strip. Zlata Zahok has more.
Clashes erupted across the West Bank on Tuesday after a series of attacks in Jerusalem and the Tel Aviv area as Palestinian groups declared a day of rage. In Bethlehem, Ramallah, and other cities, Palestinian youth burned tires and hurled stones at Israeli forces who responded with tear gas and rubber bullets. Palestinians' anger with Israel has increased in recent days over what they see as a Jewish intrusion at a holy Muslim site in Jerusalem. Palestinians in Gaza marched toward the border with Israel, protesting years of blockade. Hamas leaders backed the attacks on Israelis.
Hamas praises the heroic acts in the West Bank and Jerusalem and confirms that the increase in these operations is evidence that this intifada cannot be stopped. It is the intifada of Jerusalem. It is a strong message to the Israeli occupation because of its crime in Al-Aqsa Mosque.
The escalation of violence prompted Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to call an emergency parliament session.
I tell the chairman of the Palestinian Authority, don't turn murderers into heroes. And if there will be a deterioration as a result of this incitement by Hamas, the Islamic movement, and the Palestinian Authority, you will be held responsible.
Palestinian officials in the West Bank say Israel should be held responsible for the recent wave of violence and say they are considering an appeal to the International Criminal Court. The White House condemned the terrorist attacks that killed three Israeli civilians Tuesday and left many others wounded.
We mourn any loss of life, whether it's Israeli or it's Palestinian. The United States continues to stress the importance of condemning violence and combating incitement.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said he will go to the region soon where he hopes to calm tensions.
But this violence and any incitement to violence has got to stop.
Kerry was involved in the latest round of peace talks between the Israelis and Palestinians, which ended without resolution last year, and was followed by violence, which prompted Israel to launch deadly bombings of Gaza. Larissa Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Astronomers have discovered some odd, never-seen-before wave-like structures moving through a dusty planet-forming disk surrounding a nearby star. The star is AU Microscopy, located 32 light-years away in the constellation Microscopium. Using the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope in Chile, the astronomers say that they saw what looked like ripples moving through water. They then pulled up some earlier images of the star that was taken by the Hubble Space Telescope in 2010 and 2011. At first, they couldn't find the mysterious ripples in the Hubble images, but after some reprocessing, they were not only able to recognize the ripples, but also see that they had changed over time. The astronomers say that this odd new celestial phenomenon could provide valuable insight into the formation of planets. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear the latest from singer Demi Lovato. Afghanistan continues to sustain violence after last week's intense fighting between government forces and the Taliban in Kunduz in the northern part of the country. The Taliban briefly occupied Kunduz. VOA correspondent Aisha Tanzim is in Kabul, and she joins me by phone to discuss how the violence has impacted civilians. Aisha, I understand you've been speaking with some of the residents of Kunduz who are now in Kabul. They fled the northern Afghan city. What kind of descriptions have they given you about what they've gone through when they were in Kunduz?
A lot of them said they ran because there was fighting from all sides. One man said he has never been this scared in his life. He described how he saw children of his relatives being killed literally feet away from him, and he ran with all his family. The other families described how they left because there were bullets flying from all over, both from the Taliban side and the government side. There were RPGs. Some families just described how their homes were destroyed. So they literally fled Kunduz to save their lives.
Yeah, the group Amnesty International was saying that the Taliban were engaging in basically very barbaric practices against civilians. Have any of these people talked to you about that?
Well, these people fled Kunduz before they got in touch with any Taliban directly. They saw them from a distance. They saw killing happening from the distance, but they did not witness some of the atrocities that Amnesty's report has suggested. But other people have reported atrocities. There is some, we were unable to confirm some of the things independently that have been reported in some media. So other reports we were able to confirm. So when it comes to atrocities in a war zone, it's very difficult to determine what actually happened and who did what. and what didn't happen, and people just heard from somebody and repeated it.
Well, now the people that are from Kunduz who are now in Kabul, are they being given housing? How are they faring there in the Afghan capital?
They are, some of them are receiving help from relatives. Others are receiving help from other residents of Kabul or Kandahar. Today we met this gentleman from Kandahar, a businessman, who is hosting 900 people in a building that he has rented, and he's paying for everything, their food, their lodging, their transportation back to Kunduz if they want to go. The government has been unable to do anything. That is one of the biggest complaints we've heard from refugees, that the government did not come out to talk to them or ask them how they were faring. There was a press conference by the governor's minister for refugees who said that the government just did not have enough resources to deal with this crisis.
And generally in Kabul itself, what are conditions like? I mean, how safe is actually Kabul?
Kabul is, even though it's relatively safe compared to other cities and countries, and we are driving around freely, but there is a constant threat here. So, for example, all the United Nations personnel and the International Organization of Migration personnel, they're in a complete lockdown. And they have been like that for several days because there were indications that there was a threat against the UN. Kabul has been attacked, especially against foreign targets. So there's a constant threat that there might be an attack, you know, closer to foreign targets, closer to ministries. If you go inside any hotel or building or ministry, you have to go through quite severe checks, metal detectors, full-body pat-downs. So while driving around Kabul, you might feel things are normal. Once you start going in and out of buildings, you feel instantly that things are not. Everybody's behind very thick metal doors with armed guards outside.
All right. Thank you very much, Aisha. That is correspondent Aisha Tanzim reporting from Kabul, Afghanistan. Thanks a lot, Aisha.
Thanks for having me.
This is VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Well, International Edition's Susan Yockey joins us for this musical update.
Hey, my buddy Larry London, the host of Border Crossings, has joined me here in the studio now, and we are going to look at another story from the world of music. And today it's Demi Lovato, singer, actress, many, many talents, and she's got a new album out, I understand. Larry, welcome.
That's right. Thank you, Susan. Yes, her new album is called Confident. And it came out in the middle of October, and the new album is kind of a statement of where she's at right now with her life. She's gone through an awful lot of turmoil in the last couple of years. She was in rehab for a while. She was cutting. I guess they call it cutting when you hurt yourself.
Yes.
When you're dealing with self-confidence kinds of issues.
Yes, it's very serious.
Crying out for attention. She's gone through those kinds of things. She admitted recently to suffering depression and being bipolar, and she has started her own foundation and mental health awareness campaign because of her own experiences. She wants young people to embrace who they are and love themselves. And so that's kind of one of the things she's doing. With the new album, Confident, she's putting her music behind her message.
It seems so often that some of the great writers and singers, artists, have these issues. They have personal issues, and it seems to bring out more of themselves.
Yeah, it's amazing that somebody in show business who's had the attention and success that she's had would be going through these issues and these struggles that you know, us common folk go through. You wouldn't think that celebrities who have made it, I understand when you're struggling to make it and you haven't made it, it's the climb is very difficult, but she's achieved great things already. She's been in films like Camp Rock. She had her own TV show called Sunny with a Chance. She's going to be in another film. She's going to be a voice character in the film Smurfette.
Oh, huh, that sounds like
another
fun.
Smurf film. And so, you know, she's on tour for the new album, Confident. There have been rumors that she's engaged to actor Wilmer Valderrama. She's been dating him for a number of years. She says, no, we're not engaged. We love each other, but there's no wedding bells in the near future.
Well, tell us about one of these songs on the new album.
Well, the new song that has just come out is the title track, Confident. And it's an upbeat song, and I really like the song a lot. It's the follow-up to what was supposed to be one of the big hits from this past summer called Cool for the Summer. But now the song is Confident, and that is her brand new release, the second release from the fifth album. I used to hold my freak back, now I'm letting go. I make my own choice, yeah, I run this show. So leave the lights on, no, you can't make me behave. Oh, so you say I'm complicated, that I must be out of my mind. But you've had me underrated, rated. What's wrong with being, what's wrong with being, what's wrong with being confident?
Well, you're very good at predicting where everything's going to be on the charts. So where do you think this one's going to land?
Well, I'll tell you what, Susan, that's a great question. Right now, there's a lot of great music coming out. Justin Bieber's new album is coming out soon. So there's a lot of songs out there that are going to make it a tough stretch for her to get to number one, but I would predict she'll be in the top five with this new song.
Okay, you got money on that.
I got some money on it.
Okay,
let's see what I got in my pocket. Not too much.
That's all right. That's where I am, too.
Right.
Okay, thanks, Larry, for stopping by.
Thank you, Susan.
That's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States believes that the rights to freedom of expression and assembly are rights that all people should enjoy, online and offline. Americans and people around the world, said U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power, have a tremendous amount to gain from a free and open internet, from the broader sharing of information and ideas to more markets for businesses to a more transparent and accountable government. The internet plays a critical role in supporting democratic activity of non-governmental organizations and individuals. During a recent UN General Assembly event on internet freedom, Ambassador Power noted that there is significant correlation between governments that use the internet to repress their own citizens and NGOs and those same governments using the internet to launch cyber attacks on other countries and to hack the websites of foreign nationals and companies. During that event, in recognition of the importance a free internet plays in safeguarding human rights, Ambassador Power announced a new initiative called LIFT, Leading Internet Freedom Technology Initiative. The goal is for LIFT to foster innovative next-generation technologies to circumvent internet censorship. The U.S. is launching LIFT with a $10 million investment this year, raising its annual support for internet freedom to $33 million. The potential impact of these new technologies really can be profound, said Ambassador Power. They have the potential to make the internet inherently more resistant to control. These new technologies could help millions of users gain access to the global internet free of censorship. They complement the United States' support of secure communication technologies, as well as its broader support for civil society development and the digital and physical safety of human rights defenders. The United States cannot undertake this task alone. More governments should consider joining the Freedom Online Coalition and the Open Government Partnership. In addition, technology companies should embrace the UN guiding principles on business and human rights. These companies are also uniquely positioned to leverage their own technological innovation in order to preserve the free and open internet. It's important to remember that history is on the side of freedom. Every previous effort to destroy or curb new technologies enhancing freedom of speech, said Ambassador Power, have eventually failed. So even as repressive governments are pouring resources into trying to control the internet, the odds and time favor freedom.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.